Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine. We trace its history, how it traveled to the West, and we interview experts on the topic.
So, Linda and I want to try something new today. Linda, since this was your idea, do you want to tell listeners about it?
Yeah, sure. So since we both love to eat and we both live in cities with amazing food, we're going to try a new quick segment at the beginning of every episode where we just ask each other what's the best thing we ate in the last week. So Iris, what's the best thing you ate since we last spoke?
So, before I answer your question, I'm just going to tell everyone my dirty little secret, and that is even though I produce a show on food and I work in the food industry, I have the most boring diet ever. Like, I just live off staff meal, 7-Eleven sandwiches, and avocado on crackers. But for you, just for you, Linda, I'm going to try my best to branch out so that I can answer this question every week.
Every week.
But... so, this week, this is kind of an embarrassing answer, I guess. It makes me sound like I'm 5 years old. But I really am digging Nutella Go. I haven't had Nutella in years. Like, I'm over it. I don't really enjoy it anymore. But for some reason, like, 7-Elevens in Hong Kong started stocking it. And it just reminds me of Yan Yan, you know, that Japanese snack that's kind of like Dunkaroos with like chocolate or strawberry and then like the sticks. So I don't know, maybe it's just like a reminiscent of my childhood. So, how about you, Linda?
Well, to go back to that, that's a good one. I think Nutella's having a moment because they're opening up a like full-on store here in New York with like Nutella everything. So when you come visit, we're going to go.
Nice.
So my mom is actually back in town from China. So she is going to be cooking up a storm for me this summer, or I hope she is, or I'm going to make her. And I actually went over, to her house over the weekend and she made this amazing, kind of sounds gross, pork trotter jelly. It's kind of also hard to describe. In the sense that, like, it's like the savory jelly. It's kind of like from this like braised pork trotter, and a lot of spices are added in. And she like chops it up, and then she like puts it in the fridge. And then so when we're actually eating
it, is it served chilled?
Yeah, it's served chilled. So the gelatin from the pork trotter itself just kind of like creates that jelly. And then she takes it out, chops it into cubes, and she serves it with this like amazing, vinegary chili oil, sauce with like chopped, like fermented black beans, all mixed up. So it's like, just very savory, chewy. I don't think the texture is for everyone, but it kind of like reminded me of what we talked about in like Taiwan with like their interesting textures that they like and the like the broth cube.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds kind of good, actually. So today we're talking about a well-loved food that you find in so many different cultures. I have them almost once a week in some form or another, and that food is dumplings. It feels silly going into a definition of dumplings, but that's what we do on Feast Meets West, so here it is. It's always going to consist of small pieces of dough wrapped around a filling, with some exceptions like southern chicken and dumplings. The dough can be made of a variety of starches, and the fillings can be meat, vegetarian, or sweet. They could be boiled, fried, or steamed. We often associate it with Asian cuisine, but using this definition, you can literally find dumplings all over the world, from wontons to gyoza to xiaolongbao to momo to ravioli or even pierogies, all of which are delicious, so there must be a reason why this form of food found its way to every corner of the earth.
Yeah, wow, there's really so many kind of dumplings out there. But today we're going to focus on Taiwanese-style dumplings, and we're really excited to have Hannah Chang in the studio with us. Hannah is one half of Mimi Chang's. She opened Mimi Chang's with her sister Marion, and they serve authentic Taiwanese dumplings made with their mom's secret family recipes. But they also put a healthy, modern spin on the food by using sustainable and locally sourced ingredients. So Hannah actually started her career on Wall Street, having worked on the trading floor at JP Morgan for almost 8 years, while her sister Marion had previously held positions in the Empyeon Group and at the salad empire, Sweetgreen. And the sisters opened the first Mimi Chang's together in 2014, and the rest is history. Welcome to the show, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
So before we talk to Hannah, Iris, can you tell us anything about the history of Chinese dumplings? As I assume Taiwanese dumplings came about from China, I guess.
So I'm not sure if this is anecdotal or historically accurate, probably anecdotal, but dumplings have been around in some form or another in China for almost 2,000 years. The story is that Chinese stuffed dumplings were invented during the Han Dynasty by a man named Zhang Zhongjian. He returned to his ancestral village during the winter and saw that many people were suffering from frostbite, especially around the ears. So he cooked up a batch of mutton, chili, healing herbs, wrapped them up in dough, folded the dumplings to look like little ears, boiled them, and fed them to the people suffering from frostbite. The idea was that these ingredients would help warm them up and increase blood flow. Whether these dumplings were able to cure frostbite or not, the villagers loved these mutton dumplings and kept making them. But if you ask my opinion, I think dumplings just evolved independently around the world the way, like, bread did. It was just one of those foods that had to happen. But these dumplings were originally called jiao er, er meaning ears, referring to the shape of the dumpling. But it later became known as jiaozi and is a major food that is eaten during Chinese New Year in the north of China. Linda, your family is from the north. Is jiaozi a part of your family's traditions?
Yeah, so my family is from Beijing, and we would make and eat dumplings for most major family gatherings and definitely for Chinese New Year. I remember when I was younger, my mom would stick a peanut in one of them for fun, and whoever got that dumpling was extra lucky for the year. Also, not only are they delicious and a fun activity for the family, the Chinese are also, let's be honest, obsessed with symbols associated with wealth. And so dumplings are extra well-liked, I think, also because of their crescent shape, which resembles ancient Chinese money or, like, money purses.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So now let's turn the conversation to Hannah so we can learn more about the Taiwanese dumplings at the wildly successful Mimi Chang's. Hannah, I was at the East Village location on Memorial Day, and the line was literally out the door.
That's what we like to hear.
Yeah, you've, like, maintained that popularity since opening.
Yeah, we've been really lucky. We have a lot of regulars, and we wouldn't be anywhere, literally, without our guests who come in day in, day out, and give us good feedback, constructive criticism. We've built such a great community around us, around Mimi Chang's, and mm-hmm. That's one of the best parts of owning a business.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And
so,
we have our favorite customers who come in, like our regulars.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So could you just tell us how you and your sister ended up opening Mimi Chang's? You guys come from such diverse professional backgrounds.
Right. So I was working in finance. My sister worked in fashion. And we opened a restaurant because we like to eat. And it was really out of a void. Our mom used to send us all this amazing food all the time. And then mainly dumplings. And they moved out to the West Coast, and we ate through all the food. And then we looked around for other good options and couldn't find anything. And then a tiny light bulb went off, and we thought, okay, here's maybe a void that we can fill.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's like a little bit selfish, but it worked out.
Totally. And we didn't realize how big of a commitment it would be just to eat good food. But hey, we're here.
Yeah, I feel you. So what's your cultural and food background?
Okay, so let's see. I guess it goes back to my mom's background because she's the one who cooked food mm-hmm. for us growing up. So her dad was a general in the Taiwanese army during the Communist Civil War. Mm-hmm. And when they lost the war, he took his part of the army down to the Communist Triangle to help fight other communists in Thailand, Burma, and Laos. So my mom was actually born and raised in Thailand and then moved to Taiwan in high school. She went to college there. And she was there basically for until she was 30 and came here.
That's amazing. So
we eat all kinds of food from mm-hmm. Yunnan, from Thailand, from Taiwan. And then, of course, when we came here, she incorporated stuff that she learned from our Italian grandmother. So pretty diverse.
That is a wild background. That's awesome. Yeah. And what makes these dumplings Taiwanese?
So I think the skin is very thin. I think that food is oftentimes a reflection of the environment that you're in. Like in your family's from Beijing. Beijing gets really cold. Mm-hmm. So they like to eat a lot of more doughy breads that are filling. The skins are thicker. The meat's richer. Like a lot of lamb, because lamb is known for stimulating blood circulation. And Taiwan is actually a tropical island. When mm-hmm. you go there, you'd be shocked. But there's palm trees everywhere. And there's a surf culture there. So the food's a lot lighter because the climate is hotter. So thin skins, the fillings are lighter, not as heavy.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So, I mean, like dumpling filling combinations are really endless. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys decide on your selection of fillings?
Basically, just based on what we like to eat. So mm-hmm. We always requested our mom's signature dumpling, the Mimi Chang, because that's not necessarily a traditional recipe. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, chicken's not used in dumplings, but we love chicken, and it was tasted so light and delicate with zucchini. So ever since she made that recipe in middle school, we always request that she makes those dumplings. And then pork dumplings, of course, are a classic.
Yep.
And my dad was vegetarian for a very long time. And we also ourselves eat a lot of vegetables. We mm-hmm. actually don't eat that much meat. So it was just a natural.
Yeah, I noticed on the menu when I went to visit that there were definitely a good amount of veggie options. And that's, I feel like, kind of rare for a Chinese or even a dumpling spot.
Yeah, and especially when you go over to China or Taiwan, it's funny because you'll tell them that you're a vegetarian and then you order a vegetable dish and it comes with little pieces of meat in it. They're like, that's not meat. That's seasoning.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is your definition of a good dumpling?
So we enjoy all kinds of dumplings, but for us, the one that we actually crave is the one that's thin-skinned, that the mm-hmm. filling's really, it's full and bursting of flavor and good ingredients and a lot of vegetables. And I think that the most important thing is, how do you feel after you eat? And after we eat our mom's cooking, we feel awesome and healthy, mm-hmm. feel like we had a nutritious meal.
Yeah. And do you have some tips for making a good dumpling?
Find the best ingredients that you can. Don't skimp out on it because, you know, when you get bad ingredients, then you have to add in more salt, more distractions, as I like to call it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So
and don't prep the ingredients too far in advance. Like for us, we do everything the day of. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, once you start cutting vegetables before, it starts just degrading basically. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you leave it by itself and it's doing all weird things.
Yeah.
For sure. So real talk, mm-hmm. how many dumplings do you eat a week?
A lot. I actually have I actually try to limit myself because I don't want to get sick of dumplings. Mm-hmm. Not that I've ever gotten sick of dumplings, but I have a very addictive personality. So if I like something, any of my friends will tell you, I will eat something 20 days straight and then not touch it for 2 years. So I have dumplings probably 3 to 4 times a week.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds sensible.
Yeah, for right? You. Yeah. Not bad out of 7 days.
Yeah, and they're a complete meal in themselves.
Totally. And that's one thing that we're trying to change the perception of, because here in the U.S., a lot of times dumplings are seen as an appetizer or as a snack. Mm. But in Asian culture, it's a full meal. It's the main piece in event.
That's like a really good point.
Yeah.
So do you try out dumplings at other restaurants or cities for research, inspiration?
Yeah, definitely. I think that we're very open-minded. We like trying Beijing-style dumplings, and I think it's important to see what's out there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we always order it if the meat's from a good, responsible place.
Yeah. And so there are so many dumpling options in New York City. How do you guys stand out in this competitive dumpling landscape?
It's funny. There's been a lot of dumpling shops opening recently. Have you noticed that? I feel like we were going through a dumpling drought, and then maybe everyone just felt the same thing, that we need more dumplings. And honestly, we think that there's a dumpling out there for everyone. Mm-hmm. So the more options, the better.
Yeah. And I think you guys have done a good job just like looking at, how you guys communicate, on social media to your community. Mm-hmm. And also, tell us about your ongoing collaborations. Those are so cool.
Yeah, they're really fun. I think going back to what you were saying about how we stand out, I think we always just try to bring it back to, and I love that you use the phrase real talk, because that's a phrase that we use with our team, is real talk, and just about being authentic. I think that especially New Yorkers can smell a fraud from miles away, and sometimes we get critiques about not being authentic or something, but we're authentic to who we are and what our experience and what our background is, and I think people think that that's cool or new or interesting. In terms of our collaborations, we've been so lucky. I think one of the best things about owning a restaurant is the community around it. And we've made a lot of friends, and the hospitality industry has welcomed us with open arms. So our collaborations come about from friends.
That's really great. How often do you guys have new collaborations, and what have been some of your favorite ones?
That's such a tough question. So, well, in terms of collaborations, we're running a mini chef series right now, and also a mini sister series too. I think that captures what we think is important in our business. And in terms of favorite ones, definitely this truffle foie gras soup dumpling with Love in Madison Park right now is pretty special. Mm-hmm. And, they just won number one restaurant in the world. So the fact that we're able to collab with them, it feels like we're working with Beyonce. And other ones, Pizza Loves Emily, we did their Emmy burger, which was amazing. And then we also did a breakfast sandwich collab with Sir Kensington's ketchup. And that's one of my faves. Chicken Parm is another favorite. Mm-hmm. Those are Thanksgiving dumpling.
For sure. Yeah. That's definitely edgy. That's not what you would expect from a typical dumpling.
Right. Yeah. But it's fun. And it challenges the idea of what is a dumpling, right? Mm-hmm. Or why can't you have fun with your food? Why does it have to be so serious? Why does it always have to be pork and chives? Maybe we don't like pork and chives all the time, right?
Yeah.
So.
So we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back to talk more dumplings.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, and here in the studio with us is Hannah Chang of Mimi Chang's. So, Hannah, what is it like going into business with a sibling?
I think it's the best. You know each other, you know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and you know that you have the same priorities.
Yeah, I think you guys must have a special relationship, because I don't think every sibling duo could say that.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Did you know that you were always going to do something together, and also in food? Did that come as a complete surprise?
I think if you had asked us 10 years ago if we would ever go into business together, we both would have said definitely not. In terms of food business, I think that was a natural progression. I actually had a friend from college who sent me a Facebook message recently saying congratulations. And he said, I remember in college when you said you were going to open a restaurant in 10 years and you did it, and that's awesome. And I said, I actually don't even remember saying that to you, and that's so cool. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess I did know.
Yeah. So how does your mom feel about this, about the restaurant named after her, about her daughters working together?
So at first, our parents were very hesitant, and hesitant would be a nice way to say that. But now they love it, and they think it's awesome that we're able to do what we love and to spend so much time together. Our parents are thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
Was your mom, like, cool with sharing the recipes, or was she resistant to share her recipes with you?
She was cool with sharing the dumpling recipes, but the secret sauce, she actually was boarding a flight to Taipei and still hadn't... It had turned from a running joke about how she wouldn't share the recipe into basically a face-off. And she was boarding the plane, and I said, Mom, are you kidding me? We're opening a restaurant in 2 weeks. This is actually getting ridiculous. It's not funny anymore. And she's like, oh, fine.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You actually had to open a restaurant in order to get your mom's secret sauce.
Yeah, it was her way of always having us come back home.
Oh, that's sweet. That actually, like, brings a little tear thing down my face.
The things that moms do, right?
Yeah, for sure. And you said they were hesitant at first. So were they hesitant because of, like, the typical, like, Asian parent stereotype?
Totally. Mm-hmm. I think that there's definitely something about the stereotype, because it's really hard sometimes for immigrants when they move to a new place to have the same career that they had before. Mm-hmm. And there are certain industries that are easier to get into, even though they're not easy industries. And my parents, for them, they said, we worked really hard. We worked really hard to send you to the colleges you wanted to go to. We worked really hard to get you the dream job you wanted. And every parent wants an easy life for their kids, right? Mm-hmm. And opening a restaurant is definitely not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting, though, because your sister had been in the industry for quite a long time, right?
No, she was in fashion for many years, and then worked in the food world for about 6 months.
Got it.
After we had already decided to open a restaurant, because as our dear friend Nick from Sweetgreen said, it's a great idea. You guys have zero experience in restaurants, so you should probably come work at Sweetgreen to figure it out a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really great spot to start.
Oh, yeah, we were so lucky.
Yeah. And so what's the reception been like to Mimi Chang's from when it first opened to now? I mean, if, like, Memorial Day was any indication, amazing, but, you know, how do you feel about it?
We feel great about it. I think, you know, we always like to strive for the stars. So for us, sometimes it's hard for us to take a step back and look around and be like, wow, actually we should be really happy with what we have going on. And we are. And I think it's important to have one eye on the present and one eye on the future. Mm-hmm. But we've been so lucky. We have amazing regulars who come in that feel like family. You know, there's this East Village is around the corner from a music school, and we've literally watched kids grow up in front of our eyes.
Wow, yeah.
And there's this mom that I love, and she came in with her younger daughter, and I almost didn't recognize her younger daughter because she had grown 2 feet. And when we saw each other, we were like, oh my God, and yeah. gave each other a hug. And it's amazing that we're able to be a part of people's lives.
Mm-hmm. And you now have a second location as well in Olita. Mm-hmm. How does that differ from the East Village spot?
So it has slightly more seating. It's more spacious. The menu is a little more diverse because when we opened the first one, we didn't know what we were doing. And we kind of picked random equipment that we thought would make sense. So the second time around, we had a little more idea of what equipment to get. So we're able to do more. Mm-hmm. So we have Taiwanese beef noodle soup, which is so good. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And then we have different like Lu Ruo Fan and lots of goodies.
Yeah, that's awesome. So equipment you listed as one of the lessons you learned in this business.
Yes, definitely.
What else? What are some other surprising lessons you've learned along the way?
Surprising lessons. Let's see. Equipment. And it's funny because when we first opened that East Village, we got equipment that wasn't standard for a dumpling shop. Mm-hmm. And we were like, this is stupid. We should have asked other people what they were using. And we, after a while, fell in love with that equipment. But for us, we always just said, if only we had this X, Y, and Z, everything would be so easy. So at Nolita, we got all those things. And then we realized, actually, it's not easier. And now we want to switch back to the other model.
Okay.
So, but there's a lot of things that you really can't learn until you're actually doing it, right? Mm-hmm. You could go look at this equipment in a showroom, but until you have hundreds of people coming through and you're actually trying to crank out food, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So.
And what about kind of the amount of energy you have to put into it and in between?
You have to put team. Your literal blood, sweat, and tears into it.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Does it make you miss the trading floor at all? Or, you know?
You know, the trading floor was a really tough and challenging job. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it while I was there. This makes that look like vacation. I remember I had taken my 2-weeker during the East Village opening. And when I got back, I said, I've never been happier just to sit here for 12 hours in air conditioning.
That's fun.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? And what's next for Mimi Chang's?
So what's next for us? Well, we just opened Nolita in October. So, mm-hmm. you know, for us, we have the luxury of being able to do what we want on our own timeline. So we're just enjoying the second opening for now.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah. I feel like you guys are on track to potentially expand, but who knows? I personally feel like you guys are bringing dumplings to, just different pockets of downtown Manhattan and maybe familiarizing it as like a, you know, legit, like full meal food to people that don't get to like go to Chinatown or just like aren't familiar like with this kind of like Asian food background.
Yeah, definitely. And one of our driving motives when we first opened was that we wanted to bring good, healthy food and accessible price point to people. We're using the same meat that really high-end restaurants use.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep everything, you know, a full meal costs less than $12 or $10, depending on what you're getting. So we're trying to also break the stereotype that Chinese food is greasy, cheap food, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
How many fat, obese Chinese people do you know? And again, that's a sweeping generalization, but I think as a sweeping generalization, you don't actually know that many. So that should, the conclusion there should be that this food's actually healthy for you.
Yeah. That's a good point. So do you feel like there's anything left to innovate with such a classic and popular dish as dumplings? You guys are doing the awesome, cool collaborations, but like where else or what else do you want to do to it? Where else do you want to take it?
I'm not sure if we would say that our driving goal is always to innovate things. Mm-hmm. What drives us is memories of food that we have from growing up, and to be able to deliver an honest and true representation of that is really what we're going for. Things that remind us of home, things that remind us of summers and trips spent with our family in Taipei. You know, one of my fondest memories growing up is sitting in 103 degree weather, 100% humidity, slurping up Taiwanese beef noodle soup with no AC. You're just sweating, but it's so good.
That's amazing. Yeah. Iris and I actually went on a trip to Taiwan.
What'd you think?
It was my first time, and yeah, I completely fell in love. It's a transformative food city where, like, literally we just hopped from, like, little shop to the next shop, and we didn't sit down at, like, any one place for full meals because we wanted to just, like, expand our stomachs and try everything.
Oh, I gained 30 pounds every time I go. And my mom is a very aggressive eater. If anybody wants an amazing food tour guide, she will legit bring you to 12 restaurants per day. And I love eating. I get sick of eating when I'm with her. But she's like, you're only here for 5 days. We have to cram everything in. There's so many things you have to taste and try.
She loves you that much.
Oh, she loves me that much.
I had that experience in Taiwan. We did, like, especially one day in Yilan, we were doing, like, a little, like, food trip. And, like, by the third spot, I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Eat this one.
Yeah. No, you can't tap out. Limited time. And our mom truly does love us that much that recently she sent us some fresh salbing from Taipei. And she sent us 10 of them, neatly packed, so that they would be fresh when they arrived, and made our aunt bring them to us the next day. So good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I know we're probably going to go back to Taiwan for sure. So I know who to hit up for those recos next time.
I have an email list.
Oh my gosh. Please share.
If anybody wants them, email us at info@mimichangs.com. We share.
That's so sweet. So that actually wraps up our show for tonight. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And for those listeners who also want to stay connected to Mimi Chang's, should they follow you guys on your Instagram? Or
yeah, we would love for you guys to follow us on our Instagram. It's Mimi Chang's. That's it. And we respond to everything, so hit us up.
info@MimiChangs.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Hannah.
Thank you guys for your time. It was a pleasure to meet you guys, and hopefully we'll see some of you listeners soon.
So thank you for tuning in, everyone. Please remember to subscribe to Feast Meets West on iTunes or Stitcher. Leave us a rating and review. Hit us up on feastmeetswest.com for the latest updates. Also, don't forget to check out all the other great shows on Heritage Radio Network as well. And we'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.